1204 in Oklahoma City, along with Preston Poole producing in studio. You can follow him on Twitter at PrestonPoole405. That's P-O-O-L-E 405. My name is Matt Meyer. This is hour number two of The Bottom Line on 98.1 FM WWLS, a sports animal. We want to hear from you on the Lucky Star line at 405-900-WWLS. Trade Pros Heat and Air text Nation line at 62582. And the Sports Animal Twitter feed, powered by Mr. Electric, at Sports Animal. Lots of ways to connect with us and lots of things to connect with us about, including the Thunder and the NBA, which we're going to talk about their next opponent coming up in a matter of minutes, the NFL playoffs. I want to hear from you. Who's winning this weekend in the four NFL playoff games? We can talk about that. Cowboys and Sooners back in action this afternoon in Big 12 basketball. We can certainly talk OSU and OU football if you would like. It was good to hear from Coach T last hour, talking about the Cowboys and all the transfer portal ins and outs, so to speak, with OSU football. We can definitely take your thoughts on that. We're going to talk a lot more NFL football coming up as the hour goes along. We're going to take a look at another one of the playoff games at 12:40, the Bengals and the Bills. We'll do that with George Vogel of the NBC affiliate in Cincinnati, Channel 5 in the Queen City, coming up at 12:40. And coming up here in about 15 minutes, we'll talk about UFC 283, huge pay-per-view tonight in Rio. We'll do so with the Punisher, Emmanuel Rivera. That's coming up here in about 15 minutes or so. But we begin hour number two of The Bottom Line by welcoming in Michael Spencer of KCNC Television in Denver, the CBS affiliate, Channel 4 in the Rocky Mountains and Denver. You can go to CBSColorado.com and follow Michael on Twitter at MichaelCBS4. Michael, I really appreciate your time, and Michael's going to clue us in on those West leading Denver Nuggets, and that's because the Thunder are next up for them. Oklahoma City's next opponent tomorrow night in Denver for a 7 o'clock Central Time start, 5:30 pregame here on the Sports Animal with the Oklahoma Men's Clinic Thunder forecast. And wow, Michael, what a demolition last night. Nuggets just beat up on the Pacers, 134-111. Jamal Murray had his first career triple-double. Aaron Gordon had 28 points. They didn't even have the two-time reigning MVP, Nikola Jokic, who I'm going to ask you about here in just a second. He sat out last night. Didn't matter, though. Nuggets win their ninth game in a row. They shot 61% from the floor, hit half of their threes. Not having Jokic last night didn't seem to matter much.
No, it certainly didn't, Matt, and thanks so much for having me on. They're just playing really good basketball right now at both ends of the floor. And earlier in the year, and really ever since he got to Denver, Michael Malone has just preached defense, defense, defense. And earlier in the year, he was calling out his team really at kind of every opportunity that he got, saying, hey, look, our defense needs to be better if we want to get where we want to go. They've been top five on offense really for the majority of the year, but their defense was really substandard. They're 14th in the league right now in terms of points per game. That's not great, but it's certainly better than it was. And so to me, the offense has always been there. And kind of what you're seeing now with this Nuggets team is, one, they're healthy and they're playing really good basketball and they're playing much better defense than they have in the past. And I think that's been a big difference for them. They're also getting better bench play. They could still get better bench play, but their bench was a huge, huge issue for them last year and again at the early part of this season. And so it just feels like right now, for this Nuggets basketball team as they get ready to take on the Thunder, they're just really clicking on all cylinders, whether the back-to-back MVP is in the lineup or not.
Big fan of Michael Malone. Correct me if I'm wrong, Michael, but I believe his dad, Brendan Malone, was on Chuck Daly's staff in Detroit. And those Pistons teams, the Bad Boys Pistons teams of the late 80s, early 90s, were some of my favorite teams when I was growing up. So I'm a big fan of him. And, you know, his dad was on staff with Detroit for so long. Let's talk about Jokic, two-time reigning MVP. He's having another monster season. He's having a career-high shooting season, making 63% of his shots. He's averaging 25 points, 11 rebounds, and a career-high 10 assists a game. Michael, how fun is it to cover this guy on a nightly basis?
It's really awesome, Adam. What's really cool is that he just doesn't care. Like, honestly, he had a triple-double the other night and had five shots. And,
yeah.
Like, he name me a superstar that goes out and has that stat line and is just like, hey, man, we won the game. I really don't care. You know what I mean? Like, it's incredible. And so I think that's what's really cool. And you mentioned the career high in field goal percentage and the assist numbers. That's because they're healthy, right? And he's getting Michael Porter Jr. and Jamal Murray and Aaron Gordon and some help, right? And so I mean, last year he willed that team into the playoffs and into the sixth seed in the West. And this year he's finally like able to relax a little bit and not have to put so much on his shoulders. And I think that you're seeing the benefits of that. He doesn't have to force shots, whereas last year he had to, because he was the only guy on the floor at times that wanted to shoot, or that everybody was just like, we have 5 seconds left. Hurry, get the ball to Jokic and try and let him make something happen. And so I think the whole team being healthy and playing better has actually helped Nikola Jokic be even better, which is crazy when you're talking about a guy who's won back-to-back MVPs. But again, the cool thing about Jokic and covering him is he just doesn't care, Matt. Like, as long as they win at the end of the day, he doesn't really care about his numbers. He is not, like, trying to put on this front of being humble. That really is just who he is. And I think you see that in a lot of guys who grow up in Europe. You know, it's a team game over there, and you don't necessarily see that as much growing up here. And I think that that has kind of played into part of the reason, a big reason actually, why this team has been so successful, is because when you have a guy who is your best player, the best player in the league, and doesn't care about his numbers, you can do so many things, and it frees up so many other guys to go out and get theirs at certain times. And so I think that's a big, big reason why they're having the success that they're having this year.
Now, Jokic didn't play last night due to hamstring tightness. Is that an ongoing thing? Is that something to keep an eye on? Do you expect him to be on the floor tomorrow night? Kind of talk to me about that injury. Is it something that's kind of serious, or something that the Nuggets are just kind of keeping an eye on right now?
I think they're just keeping an eye on it right now, is kind of the sense that I get. I don't think it's anything too serious, but Jokic has played a lot of minutes and played a lot of games. He doesn't like to miss games. And so I think that the Nuggets have had to kind of pull him back a little bit, right? And so I think that this is the thing where we're past the halfway point of the season. We were staring at the All-Star break here in a couple of weeks. They know that they want to be good and clicking on all cylinders when it matters most come April and come playoff time. And they're priming themselves for a deep run. So I don't think it's anything too serious. I think you may see him sit a couple more games. Not necessarily right now. I think he'll be back. But I think you may see him sit a couple more games as this season goes on. But, man, Matt, it is like pulling teeth to get that guy to try and miss something. He wants to be out there every single night.
Let's see. Somebody who wants to be on the court every night, somebody who doesn't care about his individual numbers, two-time MVP. Yeah, I think I want that guy on my team, and Denver's lucky to have him.
Right? Who wouldn't?
Kidding. We're talking with Michael Spencer of KCNC Television in Denver, Channel 4, the CBS affiliate. This is The Bottom Line, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. Thunder in Denver tomorrow night, 7 o'clock Central time tip. 5:30 Oklahoma Men's Clinic Thunder forecast here on the Sports Animal and the Thunder Radio Network. This team is more than just Jokic. As much as we talk about him, and why would you not, two-time defending MVP, 7 different Nuggets are averaging double figures. Murray's averaging 19 a night. Aaron Gordon is scoring 17 a game. Can you kind of talk about the supporting cast around Jokic? Because as great as he is, it's more than just him that's gotten this team to the top of the West.
Yeah, for sure. And I think it starts when you're talking about the supporting cast with Jamal Murray. And they really missed him last year when he was rehabbing from that ACL. And I think that he's a guy, you know, if Jokic is like the heart, and you want to go that analogy, Jamal's the soul, because Jamal gets fiery and he gets upset and then he gets hot and then he starts raining threes. And it really adds a different dimension to that team that they missed last year. I think what they're getting from Aaron Gordon right now on the offensive end of the floor is more than they expected. And Gordon was kind of thrust into that role last year when there was no Michael Porter Jr. and no Jamal Murray. He basically became the number two. And let's be honest, he didn't perform like a number two should. And I think that that really kind of wore on him. And that was one of his big goals this offseason, was to get better on the offensive side of the floor. And so then you everything that he gives you, man, if he's giving you more than 15 a night, that is just absolute gravy. And then you add in a sharpshooter like Michael Porter Jr. when he's healthy and can stay on the floor. I think that defensively too, they've made some adjustments in Bruce Brown and Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. And I think their GM Calvin Booth deserves a lot of credit for those moves. And I think that those are all big reasons why they're sitting at number one in the West. And honestly, I think anything short of a Western Conference Finals appearance is going to be a major disappointment for this team.
Thunder Nuggets tomorrow, 7 o'clock, 5:30 pregame here on the Sports Animal. Michael, let's switch over and talk about the Broncos. A lot of Broncos fans, not only in this state, but in this entire region of the country, as you well know. Michael, I've always been a big fan of Russell Wilson, so I did not see this disaster coming this year. Broncos finished 5-12. They fire Nathaniel Hackett after one season. I'm sure this is an essay question, but how did things go so wrong in Denver this year, Michael?
Matt, remind me, what time does your show end? Look, you know, I think the main thing, well, there were a couple things. Obviously, I think getting rid of Nathaniel Hackett was big. I think that this new ownership group is going to come in. They're going to hire their own guy. I think George Payton, the GM, is in really kind of a precarious position right now because Greg Penner has come in as the CEO and really kind of the face of this ownership group and has made it his own. And he made that perfectly clear when he fired Nathaniel Hackett after that Christmas Day disaster in L.A. So I think Russell Wilson took a step back this year. I think that he can be better. I think that some of that had to do with the play calling. I think there was a lack of leadership from a coaching standpoint. And I think what you saw the last two games when they fired Nathaniel Hackett and inserted Jerry Rosberg as the interim head coach was that he was finally the adult in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, this is how we're going to do things. And if you don't perform, you will be benched. And that was to everybody. And he empowered guys. There were guys who were healthy scratches on game day when Nathaniel Hackett was the head coach who came in and had major impacts on the final two games of the regular season. So I think that what they need in a head coach is somebody who can be an adult, who can say, this is how we're going to do things. And Russell, this is where you're best. So this is where we're going to put you. And this is how you're going to perform. The lack of leadership from the head coaching standpoint and really across the board on the coaching staff was really, really evident. And I think one of the major reasons why this team did not live up to the billing and the expectation. That, and they've got to get better on the offensive line, right? And if you're Russell Wilson and you want Russell Wilson to play better, if you're a Bronco fan, it starts with getting better play out of the offensive line. From a playing perspective, that's the number one issue that they have to address this offseason.
It had to be so frustrating because this defense was one of the better defenses in the entire NFL, and this offense at times was historically bad. It's just had to be so frustrating for the Broncos. And I think, you know, like you brought up, you know, what happened Christmas Day in L.A., I think that some of those frustrations really started to boil over among guys on the team, and change was made, and I can't say it was the wrong thing to do. Hey, I've got to ask you while I've got you, Deion Sanders landing in Boulder, Colorado, has that been as big of a deal up there as it seems like it has been across the country? I, for one, am thrilled that Deion's getting a shot to run a major program like this. Michael, from a guy that's been born and raised in Oklahoma and remembers what Colorado used to be in football, I still think CU can be a top-notch program, or certainly a light years better than what they have been. Talk to me about Deion. I know what he's doing on the recruiting trail and bringing in transfers and getting commitments and all that. What have been your thoughts about Deion Sanders landing in Boulder?
Yeah, it's been wild. And I had somebody ask me the other day, like, is this a good move? And I said, look, from a PR perspective, Colorado hasn't been this relevant in years. Like you were just talking about, Matt. I mean, when was the last time the Sports Animal in Oklahoma City was talking about Colorado football?
Right? Sure.
Like they have been an absolute doormat. And so I think that what he has done has totally reinvigorated this region. Now, college football is never going to be here what it is there. And certainly I don't know that Colorado, you know, I don't know how long Deion's going to stay, right? Because I think he's going to realize that Colorado, even if they are really good, isn't going to ever be maybe one of the premier programs in the country like it was, just because of the support in the fan base. But the support in the fan base has been absolutely incredible. And what you're seeing from a national perspective is that Colorado is now relevant again. And look, it doesn't take much for them to be better. They were terrible the last several years. So it's not going to take much for them to be better. Their roster is certainly going to be head and shoulders above what it was the past several years, just based on the guys who are now on the roster. And so I think they're off to a really, really incredible start. It's going to be tough, right? I mean, the Pac-12, as you know, is is a gauntlet. And, well, it's not a gauntlet. It's certainly not the SEC, and it's not even the Big 12. But can you compete with Washington? Can you compete with Oregon? Can you compete with USC before they leave? Right? Like, they're getting good recruits, too. So there is a lot of hype around this team. And certainly, I've been here for 7 years now. It's certainly more than I have seen in my time being here and covering sports in Colorado. And in talking to people, it's more than really than it's been since the 90s when Colorado was good and relevant. So I hope they live up to the hype on the field, and I hope we don't see what we saw from the Broncos. That's the one red flag that everybody here in Colorado is worried about. But it's been incredible what Deion has done in his short time here. And like I said, the roster is going to be better. The players are going to be better. So they're just by virtue of that, they're going to be better on the field than they have been the last several years.
Hey, Michael, thanks so much for the time. Really appreciate you hopping on. Have a great day, okay?
All right, guys, appreciate you. Love listening to you when I'm in town, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks, man. That's Michael Spencer. I believe Michael has family in Edmond, if I'm not mistaken. Hopefully they're listening. Hi, thank you for listening if you are. But, yeah, I think we've had Michael on before and has some family around here. So appreciate him hopping on to talk about the Nuggets, the next opponent for the Oklahoma City Thunder. That game tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, 5:30 pregame here on 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. Up next, we turn our attention to UFC and what a show we have tonight. Two championship fights on the line, plus an absolute bombshell this week in UFC as perhaps the greatest fighter in the history of mixed martial arts is finally scheduled to compete again. We will talk about that and many other things with the Punisher, Emmanuel Rivera, coming up next on 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports and...
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.
Named one of the best personal finance podcasts, The Stacking Benjamin Show with Joe and his friends makes financial literacy fun.
Work hard and save your money. That way, when you're old like me, you can buy the things that only young people can enjoy.
Squirrel watching.
You heard it here first. Get yourself a squirrel cam. Spend $30 a month on nuts, and you'll be at early retirement before you know it.
No, Piggy, this is the road to a podcast nobody listens to.
Find out more by searching The Stacking Benjamins podcast wherever you listen.
Animal. Number two, Kansas is trailing number 14, TCU. Horned Frogs over the Jayhawks right now, 26-13. Now, this is in the first half, okay? So how many times have we seen if both state teams this year have gave Kansas everything they wanted, among other teams, have gone into Allen Fieldhouse this year and gotten leads on KU only to see KU come back. It's kind of what they do in the fog. But right now, Horned Frogs have doubled up Kansas 26-13, 11:36 left to go first half. The state teams today, Oklahoma State has a big, big game today, hosting number 12, Iowa State. That's a 1 o'clock game on ESPN+. And the Sooners hosting number 21, Baylor today at 3 o'clock on ESPN2. So the state teams trying to keep their head above water as far as making the NCAA tournament. Right now, in Joe Lunardi's projections on ESPN.com, he has Oklahoma as a 12 seed and the very last team in the tournament. He has Oklahoma State as one of the next four out. Not the first four out, but the next four out. And if you look at the team's net rankings, the power ranking that the NCAA Tournament Committee looks at, Oklahoma State, as of the last ranking that was put out on the NCAA's website, OSU 45 and Oklahoma 57. So both teams right there on the bubble as far as making the NCAA tournament. Got to protect your home court, man. And it would be big for both these teams to get wins over ranked teams as they host them this afternoon. OSU hosting Iowa State at 1 and OU hosting Baylor today at 3 o'clock. Joining us right now, Emmanuel Rivera, our mixed martial arts and combat sports analyst. You can follow E-Man on Twitter at E-Man_Rivera. And boy, what a week in UFC, E-Man. Going to be highlighted by UFC 283 tonight. We'll talk about that here in just a second. Let's start off, though, by looking back at last week's UFC Fight Night in Las Vegas. Sean Strickland defeated Nassourdin Imavov, by unanimous decision in the main event. Dan Ige beat Damon Jackson by TKO. What stood out to you on last week's UFC show, E-Man?
Well, I think we got to talk about Sean Strickland taking this fight on short notice and also moving up a weight. So Sean Strickland, I think, has lost the last two fights. So something like this typically would be smart. But there's another side to this. You know, Sean Strickland taking this fight on short notice, there's a lot of mental warfare that you don't have to go through in training camp, right? So there's a lot of hard training. There's a lot of thinking of the fight that you have coming up. Sometimes when you go in and just take a fight and go in there and have fun, then things like this happen. So Sean Strickland looked very good against a bigger guy, essentially a bigger guy in Imavov. So got that decision to win. Dan Ige, man, he's always showing his power, but he showed it again this time against Damon Jackson, taking Jackson out in the second round. And another fight that stood out to me is obviously Umar Nurmagomedov. This guy, you see that last name, you better beware. Mm-hmm. And there's reasons why. Those guys are a different level of training, and we see it in the wins that they're getting lately.
No doubt about that. Yeah, if you see Nurmagomedov, you better tune in. You better pay attention, because those guys normally know what they're doing. One of the best ever, Khabib, with that last name as well. So this afternoon, Rio de Janeiro, UFC 283, a lot of really good fights on this card. Can't wait for this. The main event is for the vacant light heavyweight title, Glover Teixeira taking on Jamahal Hill. Of course, Teixeira lost his championship to Yuri Prochaska in June of last year. Prochaska has since had to vacate the belt due to an injury. Hill has won three in a row. He last beat Thiago Santos in August. Break this one down for us. What does each fighter need to do to win?
Man, it is the young guy versus the old guy. Mm-hmm. But the old guy has been looking great lately. And Glover, his experience, I mean, there's not a guy that uses experience better than Glover Teixeira, in my opinion. He has shown over and over that he can take some damage at first with these explosive guys. But at the end, you better finish him. If not, he's coming back and he's putting pressure on you and taking you down. He still has it. So that's exactly what he has to do. He's going to have to weather the storm of that right hand from Jamahal Hill. Jamahal Hill, I mean, taking guys out in the first round is something he does well. And Glover Teixeira, you know, is a guy that doesn't go out in the first round. So this is a very interesting fight. Jamahal Hill has to really go out there and try to pick Glover apart, stay away from the ground game. But again, it's super tough to do that against a seasoned guy like Glover Teixeira. And, you know, you could arguably say that he's in his prime at 42 years old. You can't argue that right now. So, you know, this is going to be a great main event.
Flyweight title also on the line tonight. Davison Figueiredo defends against Brandon Moreno. This is going to be the fourth fight between these two, and the record so far, one win, one loss, and a draw. Give us a key or two for both guys, Figueiredo and Moreno, to win this fight. What do you think each one? What do you think each other one will have to do in order to win this? In order to win their fight tonight?
You know, Brandon Moreno is very, very good when he's putting pressure, when he's mixing it up with the takedowns. You know, coming back upstairs. You know, Figueiredo is a guy that also likes to put pressure on. So they both have to play almost the same game. Really mix it up, and they both do that so well, and they've done it so well against each other. Obviously, they have a draw, and they had two very close fights. So it's going to be one of those chess matches where who can implement their game plan the best, because their game plan is very similar. Figueiredo really needs to land a power shot, and Brandon Moreno is a guy that stays a little busier but lands that sniper shot eventually. So Brandon Moreno has showed his cardio is just insane, and Figueiredo has showed a little chink in that armor, right? So Brandon Moreno really has to put the pressure on Figueiredo and finish him to really cement himself as the best.
The early preliminaries start at 4:30 ESPN Plus. The prelims continue on ABC and ESPN at 7, and the pay-per-view portion of the card begins at 9:00 tonight. UFC 283. This is the Bottom Line, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the Sports Animal. We're joined by Emmanuel Rivera, who is 6-2 as a professional mixed martial artist and 1-0 as a professional boxer, our MMA and combat sports analyst. So it's been a heavy news week in UFC. Let's recap some of the big stories. We found out last Saturday that heavyweight champion Francis Ngannou has been released after he and UFC could not come to terms on a new deal. Now, we'll get to Ngannou here in just a second, but let's talk about how the heavyweight championship is going to be decided. It's going to be Ciryl Gane against a returning John Jones. Finally, UFC 285. This is going to be on March the 4th. I got to think, E-Man, and you have a lot better perspective than me, I got to think it's one of the most anticipated fights we've ever seen in UFC. The long-awaited move for Jones to heavyweight after competing at light heavyweight for so long. Jones hasn't fought since he beat Dominic Reyes back in February of 2020. Gane is a former heavyweight champion in his own right. There's no denying the drawing power and seeing John Jones back in the octagon, let alone fighting for the heavyweight title. Talk to me about this decision. Is UFC doing the correct thing here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, you know, as a fan, you wanted to see the current champ, which is Ngannou, versus the GOAT in many people's eyes, which is John Jones. And, you know, it's such an intriguing matchup. But, again, I don't know if it's going to be a tougher match or not for John Jones to go against Ciryl Gane. You know, Ciryl Gane really moves very well. Now, people's argument will be, John Jones will out-grapple Gane and get him tired if Ngannou could do that, right? So, you know, will Gane go in there and, you know, get better with his takedown defense, move his feet better, not overextend in certain places? That's the question we got. And Ngannou, it's super sad to see him go, but, you know, we have a great fight on our hands for the fans, and John Jones is going straight for the toughest guy in the division, so that's going to be very interesting.
We've talked a lot about Jones over the past few years. You know, on one hand, any nagging injury that he might have been dealing with should be healed up. So from a health perspective, you know, he doesn't have the wear and tear because he hadn't fought in 3 years. On the other hand, not having competed in UFC in more than 3 years, there's a potential there for, you know, for ring rust or whatever you want to call it. Where do you land on that, E-Man? Do you think can it be a positive or a negative that he hasn't fought in so long coming into this fight?
You know, I think that there's a certain threshold. There's a certain point that maybe it's not good, right? So after a certain amount of time to take off from competing and being active, there's a difference between training and going out there under the lights and performing, you know, when it's time, right? So John Jones, though, is a guy that is willing to take the time off and come back and go against the toughest guy. Whether you believe in ring rust or not, you know, I'm the kind of guy that, you know, really doesn't leans towards not believing in ring rust. I think that that's just a mental thing. I think that there's some things that you might have to get over when you're actually going out there competing. But that's the thing we're about to find out. And that's what makes it so interesting, is that John Jones is coming straight for the toughest guy in the division because the next toughest guy, you know, left. So this is you got to give props to John Jones. He's not taking a guy in the low top 10. He's going straight for the number one. And, you know, John Jones is willing to show to see if he still has it.
As far as Ngannou goes, Dana White said this week that Ngannou was offered a deal to make him the highest paid heavyweight in UFC history, but Ngannou turned it down. Now, Ngannou said that the deal offered to him gave him, quote, no rights and no power. What do you think is next for him? Could he move to Bellator? I know he's talked about wanting to box in the past, saying, quote, it's something I must do before the end of my career. What do you think the next step is for Francis Ngannou?
To tell you the truth, I think that 100% before he gets another MMA fight, he's going to get a boxing match. He knows that, you know, that's just less danger for him. You know, he's going to go in there. He has a power. He has a name that he can generate some big money, more money than he's ever made in any kind of MMA fight, or probably will ever make an MMA fight. So I think the first thing he does is signs one or two fight deal with a boxing match, get some big names, and really generate some more hype in the boxing world. And then maybe we see him come back to MMA, but I really think that the boxing is going to be next for him.
Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua, Deontay Wilder, all some of the big heavyweight names that I know a lot of people would be intrigued in. I think as powerful as Ngannou is, I think it would be tough for him to step in right away and knock off one of the better heavyweights. Mm-hmm. But I know that that's something that would bring a lot of money in. So keep an eye on that here in the coming months. Hey, Iman, tell us about the Come Up Foundation. It's your nonprofit that you guys do great work with Oklahoma youth to get involved in their lives, and you use martial arts to do it. Tell us a little bit about the Come Up Foundation and how people can get involved.
Yeah, we started the Come Up Foundation to go and really offer free martial arts training to youths, to the youth. So we go to organizations that already have the youth in place, which is like churches, city centers, and we just go in and really try to mentor and implement some healthy lifestyles. You guys can check us out on Instagram at the Come Up Foundation _Foundation, or on Facebook, the Come Up Inc. Definitely give us a message if you're interested in maybe some donations or other ways to help.
Hey, E-Man, really appreciate the time. Enjoy all the fights tonight. We'll break it down next week, okay?
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah, talk to you soon. Thank you. That's the Punisher, Emmanuel Rivera, our mixed martial arts and combat sports analyst. Well, what do you know? Kansas goes on an 8-0 run over the last minute or so, and TCU has their lead cut to 14. TCU has just been incredible offensively in this game so far. The Horned Frogs lead the Jayhawks 37-23 with about 7:10 left to go in the first half, but who would have thunk it? Kansas making a comeback. You would have never seen that coming. Hey, coming up next, we're going to preview tomorrow's AFC playoff game between the Cincinnati Bengals and the Buffalo Bills. A lot of local connections on the Bengals. Zach Taylor, the head coach, Mixon and Pirine in the backfield. So we'll talk about the Bengals and their chances to go to Buffalo tomorrow and make their second straight AFC championship game. We'll do that with George Vogel of Channel 5 in Cincinnati, the NBC affiliate. That's coming up next on The Bottom Line, 98.1. FM, WWLS, the sports animal.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show.
Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville?
Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
15 minutes away from the Ravis Island with Matt Ravis. He'll be on from 1 to 3. Just the tip with Q-Tip from 3 to 5. And Sports Animal Live with Sam Humphries today from 5 to 7. And like Preston just mentioned, get out and see Mr. Bag with the Morning Animals. He'll be from 2 to 4 today. So a crossover with the Ravis Island and Just the Tip at the Rink Gallery. And, boy, great things to shop for out there. Plus, if you're one of the first 25 in the door, you get a free gift. I would highly encourage you to go out and see Teabag today from 2 to 4 at the Rink Gallery, 3200 North Rockwell, with 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. We're going to talk a lot more NFL playoffs throughout the rest of this show, and right now we bring in George Vogel of WLWT Television, the NBC affiliate, Channel 5 in Cincinnati. You can go to WLWT.com. And you can follow George on Twitter at Vogel_WLWT. Can't wait for this one tomorrow. What a game this is going to be. Bengals and Bills tomorrow, 2 o'clock Central Time from Highmark Stadium in Orchard Park, New York. And George, wow, what a dramatic night last Sunday at Paycor Stadium. Bengals defeat the Ravens 24-17 to advance to the divisional round of the AFC playoffs. Biggest play of the game, and I would say, George, of Cincinnati's season to me, the 98-yard fumble return for a touchdown by Sam Hubbard. George, I know the Bengals have been in 3 Super Bowls, but the way that that win last week happened with Hubbard's fumble return for a score and then a last-second heave into the end zone that went right through a Ravens receiver's fingers, beating a division rival in the playoffs, that had to be one of the more memorable nights to me, George, in Bengals history. Am I going too far with that?
Nope, you're not going too far at all. In fact, a lot of people feel that might be the greatest play in Bengals team history.
Wow.
Given the circumstances, mm-hmm. given the magnitude, given what was going on in that game, you go back probably – a play that you could argue is the greatest play in history would be the Stanford Jennings kickoff return in Super Bowl 23 that
sure.
gave the Bengals the lead down in Miami. That's the only one that people can compare to this. I mean, it's when you think about great plays in the history of this franchise in big moments, that one really sticks out. And I think everyone at that game feels that had the defense not done it, we're not sure the offense could have scored or put any more points on the board. So a good chance Baltimore wins that game if that play doesn't happen.
Let's talk about that offense. Joe Burrow, he's had another terrific season, third year out of LSU. In the regular season this year, he completed 68% of his passes for over 4,400 yards, 35 touchdowns, only 12 interceptions. How would you describe his progression since coming into the league, George?
He's just so darn good. From the first season when he got his knee wrecked, but there were a few turnover issues, and those kind of crept up also in the beginning of year number two. He fixed that. Then, you know, last year there were all the sacks. In fact, in the second playoff game last year, he was sacked 9 times down in Tennessee. But he seems to have progressed this season to fix that problem, where he realizes if the line's not up to snuff or the rush is too much, he's going to get rid of it or find a way to offset that pass rush now. And if he's got to, you know, if he's got to eat the ball, fine, but more than likely – throw it away, live to see another day, all that. He's just really progressed very well. For being a third-year guy, he's way ahead of the curve.
And certainly not short of confidence. I always get a kick out of his press conferences. You can tell he's got kind of rightfully so. I mean, the guy's a fantastic player, and he's got a lot of weaponry around him. Jamar Chase had over 1,000 yards and 9 TDs in the regular season, despite the fact Chase only played in 12 games. T. Higgins had a 1,000-yard season. Former Sooner Joe Mixon had over 1,200 all-purpose yards in the regular year. Can you talk about kind of the rest of the pieces of this Bengals offense and how explosive they can be?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they this year you add the tight end Hayden Hurst, who came in, a former first-round pick, who, you know, kind of got lost in the shuffle in Baltimore because of Mark Andrews, and then spent a year in Atlanta, and then ended up in Cincinnati as a free agent. He's been a great pickup for him. But, yeah, those weapons, it's kind of you got to pick your poison. And, you know, if you take away Higgins and Chase, you know, you got to deal with Hurst, and you got to deal with Tyler Boyd, who's really one of the better third down and he probably doesn't want to be known as a possession-type receiver, but I call him that just because he's so darn reliable. And so, yeah, it's a pick-your-poison kind of thing. You know, the issue going into this one, though, is just the banged-up offensive line and how much time Joe's going to have to find which poison he can use.
Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about next. We're talking with George Vogel of WLWT Television, Channel 5, the NBC affiliate in Cincinnati. You can follow George on Twitter at Vogel_WLWT. This is the bottom line, 98.1 FM, WWLS, the sports animal. You mentioned it, George, Cincinnati dealing with a lot of injuries on their offensive line. They've been without Lyle Collins for a few weeks. Now Alex Kappa and Jonah Williams, according to ESPN, have both been ruled out of the game tomorrow. Although I do think it's interesting, George, I don't know what it is about sports. Here lately, I've seen guys ruled out, and then the next day they're questionable. I'm thinking, wait a minute now, if a guy is out, that means out to me. So sometimes, anyway, these injury designations. But now the Bengals O-line, you mentioned it, they've protected Burrow a lot better this year than last. Last year, I was worried about his future because, like you mentioned, he just took a beating a season ago, 9 sacks in that playoff win over the Titans. But now the Bengals are all kinds of beat up on the offensive line. How big of a concern is that going into the game tomorrow against the Bills?
Yeah, I think it's huge. You know, the offensive line, they knew they had to fix it. They went out and did it. They brought in Ted Karras as a free agent signing at center. Kappa came in as a free agent signing at guard. Collins came in, free agent signing at tackle. They did a really good job revamping that line. And now you've got, you know, Collins and Kappa are out. Jonah Williams, the left tackle, former first-round pick, he's out at left tackle now. So, you know, second-year man Jackson Carman will be starting there. They did pick up right before the season another guard, Max Sharping, who's played with Houston a few years. So he's got 4 years. He'll be starting tomorrow. So there is, you know, there's talent there, not experience at left tackle. Right tackle, Akeem Adeniji had to come in and step in for Collins. So it's patchwork. It really is. And it's a concern. They did okay last week, but they also all had their moments, you know, showing some weaknesses. So I'm sure that Zach Taylor's cooking up a game plan that will try to minimize the damage done to that line. And it'll be interesting to see what they roll out there, because that Bills defense is no joke.
A lot of people around here pulling for the Bengals. Not only Joe Mixon and Samaje Perine, former Sooners, but Zach Taylor, the Norman High School product, as the head coach. I'm thrilled for him, particularly, George, after his first 2 years as the head coach and not going very well. Bengals stick with him, as they've been prone to do. That's one thing I'll say about them. You know, they hung with Marv Lewis for a long, long time, so it seems like they're pretty patient.
Yep.
With head coaches up there, and I'll give them that credit. And I think the Bengals have rewarded that patience with 22 regular season wins and 4 postseason wins in the last 2 years. So there's a lot of people down here rooting for the Bengals. Give me a key or two tomorrow if Cincinnati's going to go to Buffalo and make the AFC Championship game for the second straight year.
Well, I'll tell you what, you mentioned P. Ryan and Mix. It would be huge for the Bengals if they can get either one or both of those guys going on the ground. That if they can get that going, that kind of minimizes the pass protection issues that they may have in that game. So I think getting those two going is very, very critical. And then they just have to keep Josh Allen from going off. And I know, you know, we sit here and say that, and in those playoff games, he's, you know, it's 300 yards plus and 3-plus touchdowns passing per game. That they get that running game going, minimize that, and keep Josh Allen under control. Like I said, easier said than done, but they've got to keep him from going off. Then, up on the road.
Hey, George, I really appreciate it. Enjoy the ball game tomorrow. Thanks for hopping on with us, man. Have a great day, okay?
Anytime, and I'll tell you what, keep sending those Oklahoma products to Cincinnati. We love them.
Well, we'll do our best, man. No problem. That's George.
All right.
That's George Vogel of the NBC affiliate, Channel 5 in Cincinnati, WLWT. You can follow George on Twitter at Vogel_WLWT. I'm going to go with the Chiefs. I'll say the Chiefs cover the 9.5. I'll say, 34-17 Kansas City. I'm really interested in this Philly Giants game for obvious reasons. That's who the winner of the Cowboys 49ers game will play. 8 points right now is what Caesars has it. That seems like a little much to me. What I'm really interested in this Giants and Eagles game is, how do the Eagles approach things from a game plan perspective with the Jalen Hurts injury? Not only from, you know, a throwing perspective, but will the Eagles continue to run their offense as they have the majority of the season with the RPOs, with the quarterback run game, or do they try to protect Hurts a little bit? I'm going to be really interested to see what the Eagles do in that respect. I'll pick the Eagles to win. 8 points seems just like a little too much to me. I know the Eagles beat them twice in the regular season. Really, I think you can only take anything away from the first game. The second game, the Giants were resting a bunch of people. I don't think you can really take much out of that. I think the Eagles are really good. They've not been playing as well recently as perhaps they were earlier in the year. I still think they're better than the Giants, and they've had a week to kind of rest up and heal up a little bit. So I will take Philadelphia, let's say 27-21 Philadelphia over the New York Giants. Tomorrow's games, the injuries on the offensive line really concern me for Cincinnati. It's not that I don't think Cincinnati can go up there and win. I just think those injuries are really... they're going to be tough to overcome. And I just think Buffalo's a little too explosive for Cincinnati. Look, the fumble return for a touchdown last week by Hubbard was a great play, but that it was also very, very fortunate for Cincinnati. Baltimore was this close to going ahead by a score. Now, again, we don't know. Cincinnati may have gone right back down the field and scored anyway. We'll never know, you know, what would have happened. I'm going to take the Bills. I'll take Buffalo by a touchdown. Let's say 31-24 Buffalo tomorrow. And on the sportsanimal.com, I write an article each and every week on the Dallas Cowboys. I pick San Francisco 30, Dallas 20. I just think the Niners are too good. Right now, I think the Niners are the best team in football. At times this year, I thought it was the Bills. They were my preseason pick to win the Super Bowl. And then I kind of got on the Eagles train, the way that they were playing. And I think both those teams are really good. But right now, even though the Niners haven't necessarily, even though they've won, what, 11 in a row, it hasn't necessarily been against the best competition, and I understand that. At the same time, the Niners are rolling. I just think they have too much firepower offensively. I think, you know, they don't mind running the football because they can do it, especially with McCaffrey now. And I just don't know that Dallas has enough in the on defense. I think they can put pressure on Purdy, but man, when you have to try to cover Samuel and Kittle and Ayuk, I just think that's a little too much for the Cowboys. So I'm going to take the 49ers 30-20 tomorrow out in San Francisco. So I will say it's going to be Kansas City and Buffalo and San Francisco and Philadelphia in the championship games next weekend. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to everybody for calling in and for texting and tweeting in. Thanks to Preston Poole for producing in studio. Don't forget 3 to 5 today, just the tip with Q-Tip. Sports Animal Live with Sam Humphries from 5 until 7. And Teabag of the Morning Animals will be at the Rink Gallery from 2 to 4 today, crossing over from Matt Ravis to Q-Tip with just the tip. Up next, the Ravis Island. Matt Ravis taking your phone calls on 98.1 FM, WWLS, the Sports Animal.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.